From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 5th day of August, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office for the day. Coming up, we'll hear a panel discussion that took place at the Danforth Plant Sciences Center in St. Louis about the Ag Coast. This is the port and barge system that is intermodal along a 15-mile span of the Mississippi River at St. Louis. I found it to be a riveting discussion, but I like these sorts of things. I hope you will too.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The following AgCoast discussion was part of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Summer Agribusiness Dinner. It was led by NAFB member Jesse Harding from Nebraska and includes the past chair of the United Soybean Board, Missouri farmer Megan Kaiser, along with Dennis Wilmsmeyer, the executive director of America's Central Port, and Mary Lammy. She's the executive vice president for Multimodal Enterprises for Bi-State Development and starts the panel off by explaining what the assets are along the 15-mile-long Ag Coast at St. Louis.
We have two international cargo airports. We have four interstates. The benefit of what we have with those four interstates and being that geographic advantage in the center of the U.S. is it gives us basically a one-day truck drive to our sister city. So in the manufacturing industry, generally you want to be a one-day truck drive to Kansas City, Chicago, Memphis, Nashville, because typically you're moving raw materials in and out of those areas. You're moving partially assembled parts back and forth or the final assembly. So that kind of gives you a snapshot of what we have that we consider ourselves as a global logistics hub. But then from a marketing perspective over the last couple of years, to just try and give a better understanding some of those statistics that we have, we've marketed ourselves as the most efficient inland port system. I started working for the St. Louis Regional Freightway about 8 or 9 years ago. And we realized, I at that point realized, so we're the third largest inland port. I'm like, how can we be the third largest inland port if we've got all these other great strengths? And it turns out that my sister cities actually had the distance that they were being measured on extended. So we're 70 miles. The sister cities are 200 miles, 350 miles. So as an engineer, I went back and I'm like, I hate being number three. We're actually number five right now. But I'm like, there's something's got to be out there that really you can understand that cost effectiveness that you have moving commodities in the St. Louis area. And we did the math. We basically took the total tonnage that we're moving on our inland ports by that distance that we're measured on 70 miles. We're basically moving four times the amount of tons of commodities per mile than those sister cities. So we branded ourselves as most efficient port system. So then we win. So that made me happy. And then the last thing I want to mention is, so again, it was mentioned earlier as far as telling that story, you know, it's that relatability. You know, it's one thing to say four interstates, six class one railroads, but what does that really mean? And so I met with the barge industry about 6 or 7 years ago. And I asked, okay, I know we're really good when it's moving ag products. And I know we've got, you know, these 200, you know, port facilities up and down the Mississippi River in our immediate area. But why are we good? What? Tell me what I can explain to others so they really understand what our role is. And finally, they're like, Mary, you know that there's nowhere else on the inland waterway system in a 15-mile area that is moving the amount of ag and fertilizer products anywhere on the inland waterway system in the St. Louis area. It's within a 15-mile section, and it is by 16 barge terminal facilities. Now, again, we've got over 200 of them, but there's 16 of them that have that infrastructure in place, that modal flexibility that allows a barge operator to move their commodities from rail to barge or to a truck. And so we brand, and then we had to call it something. Dennis, my friend sitting to the left of me in our marketing committee meeting as an engineer, I'm like, hey, I got this great story. And I'm like, nobody else is doing this. It really focuses on the infrastructure. We talked about all these companies that are make up those 16, and we're promoting those companies because we're basically marketing and we want their competitors to bring their business to the area. I'm like, let's do the story. It'll be great. And then Dennis kept saying, Mary, you got to call it something. I'm like, Dennis, we're fine because I'm an engineer. It's like, we're fine. Let's just do it. And Dennis was like, no, really, you need to call it something. And we ended up collectively, with Dennis's help, branding ourselves as AgCoast of America. And that's, again, because of that role that we have from a transportation perspective, that geographic advantage, and all the great infrastructure that we have in the region.
Thank you. I know when I hear the word port, I typically think of a coastal facility. So Dennis, can you explain what an inland waterway port is and what it is that you do?
Yeah, absolutely, Jesse. And thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. Greatly appreciate it. Great to see all of you. And again, welcome to St. Louis. We appreciate that. So you think of coastal ports. Port, when you think of port, you think of maybe Port of Los Angeles, Long Beach. A lot of big ships coming in there. And what are they doing? They're unloading cargoes at those ports, taking them to storage, temporary storage, or to rail car or to truck. Well, that's the same thing we do in the smaller inland ports, like here on the Mississippi River. We're just not bringing as large of ships. They're coming in by barge. And so what we're doing is offloading those products, taking it to temporary storage, but mostly we're moving that to rail car or truck, or we're doing the opposite, where we're bringing in trucks and rail cars, and we're taking that directly out to barge. So it's the same concept that you see at the coastal ports. It's just happening here right on the Mississippi River. And a lot of you talk about East Coast, West Coast ports. There are quite a few people in the area here, especially that call the Mississippi River the Middle Coast, because of the amount of traffic and commodities, as Mary was talking about, the amount of traffic that moves on that river system up and down, and really the lifeblood, I think, for some of the farmers here in the Midwest to get their product to the river as cost effectively as possible.
When it comes to, I grew up here in the region. Some of you might not know that. I grew up across the river in Illinois. So I've always known that St. Louis and the metro region has been really special when it comes to trade. And Mary touched on that. Can you expand a little bit more what that means for agriculture for this reason?
Oh, absolutely. So again, you all understand getting your product to market is as critical as possible, right? All the farmers that are farming in the fields need to get that product to market as cost effectively as possible, because if the cost becomes so prohibitive, then obviously the end purchase of that product is very expensive. So what we do from a transportation perspective, again, moving those commodities by river, using the most economically friendly form of transportation. And you all know this, right? You go from what's the most expensive? It's going to be air travel. You'd never think about moving any of your commodities, any of the farm commodities, by air. What's next most expensive? It's going to be right by a truck, and then by rail, and then by barge. And does anybody know what the least costly method is to move? Surprisingly, not barge. But it's not something that you'd probably be moving those commodities by as pipeline. So that's kind of the order of how that's moved. But here in the St. Louis area, we're blessed with all of those. So Jesse, as you mentioned, I mean, growing up here in the area, we have so many of those opportunities with access to the Class 1 railroads, all of them, with great highway and roadway access, but certainly that Mississippi River provides incredible opportunities to get the farmers' products to market as cost effectively as possible.
You're listening to an intermodal panel discussion about the 15-mile Ag Coast in St. Louis that took place in the month of July 2024 at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's annual Summer Agribusiness Dinner. A quick definition, a Class 1 railroad is defined as earning more than $500 billion in revenue annually.
Megan, you touched earlier on some of the things that USB is doing to fund transportation, not necessarily here in St. Louis, but riverwide, that impacts producers in the entire region that use the Mississippi. What does it mean for you as a producer, being from Missouri, to be so close to this transportation hub?
Yeah, well, how many of you have ever watched Sesame Street? Right? Okay. Does anybody recall the segment where they sing it? I'm not going to sing it to you, but they say, "I wonder what if, let's try," right? Great thing to teach your toddler. Also a great thing to utilize at the United Soybean Board, because when I came on the board 8 years ago now, in the first year, we had this infrastructure segment of our strategic plan, and we were in year like 4 of that 5-year plan. And they're like, "Don't even worry about that. It turns out we can't do anything. We can't own infrastructure as a checkoff. So we're just going to like move past it." And I'm like, "Whoa, what? obviously it was there for a reason, you know? And so farmers sat around a table like this at breakfast and said, we've got to figure out some way that we can do something, because right now we're living in a system of being price takers, destiny determined. We're just going to drop off our grain and call it a day. And it, what happens to us happens to us. And that's exactly not the point of the checkoff. The whole point of the checkoff is for farmers to be able to engage and say, we're going to try to leverage this position to make our destiny a little bit better. And so we said, we're going to put $2 million up, and we want to do something on the Mississippi River. We went to the Soy Transportation Coalition and said, what do you think we could do? And Mike Steenhook said, you know, dredging the lower Mississippi would be something that would have an impact on every bushel of grain in the entire United States. Because if it wasn't going out the port of Louisiana, then it was going out somewhere else, right? So we said, okay, let's figure out how to do that. Well, guess what? Next problem, checkoff cannot engage in domestic or foreign policy. It is very difficult to work with the federal government without talking to policymakers or decision makers. Mike Steenhook said, you know what? You know who else Soy Transportation Coalition works with? American Soybean Association. They can go talk to the policymakers. So they were able to say, hey, there's $2 million sitting here waiting to be leveraged in some manner. Can you work with us? So finally, it was the state of Louisiana who said, I don't know if they can figure it out, but we could use your $2 million as part of our local investment. Our $2 million got leveraged by $245 million by the state of Louisiana and the federal government. And 4 years later, they were able to actually start dredging the lower Mississippi. Now, yes, that's a long timeline, but that's the beauty of the checkoff too, is we can be patient. Within a year, we started working at Port of Grace. And when I say working, we're not digging shovels, we're not building anything, but we're breaking down the barrier. We're doing the environmental studies. We're helping the planning, engineering, and design, the stuff that no politician wants to put their name on because everybody's like, what? What was that? But we can invest in that and break down the obstacle that prevented the real project from happening and make sure that it's done correctly so that we can be, you know, the order that you said of expensive, that's also the same order of what emits the most greenhouse gas emissions. And water transportation is very low on that list. So if I can put more of my grain on water vessels, I can get it and say that my soybean is more efficient because of how it arrived at your port, at your business. And now your sustainability story is better, not only because I did a great job farming, but I also got it to you in the most efficient way possible. And so that's why farmers are very invested in continuing to make sure our infrastructure is sustainable and reliable.
Question for either Dennis or Mary. I'll let you fight over who wants to take it. But how has volumes changed over the years? There's lots of projects going on, making it hopefully easier for producers to get their products to end users. So what has that looked like over the years?
Yeah, so interesting. So we deal with a lot of different commodities first. I mean, I'd love to talk about agricultural here tonight because that's about 60% of what we handle through the port. Volumes themselves, I mean, it's interesting. COVID was mentioned earlier. Coming out of COVID, everything seemed to drop off. After the big push, we had barge shortages. We had a whole lot of things. There was a lot of slow movement in the system and in the industry. That's rebounded some. But we've had low water here on the Mississippi River for about 2 years until very recently. And low water is not kind to the barge industry. It does take a lot more. You end up losing product by letting it sit on the dock and not being able to fully load those barges. So when you can put 1,700 tons on one barge, and then you tie those barges together on the lower Mississippi River, 30, 40 barges at a time, you realize there's a lot of commodity there that you can move. That low water, when you got to leave 10 to 15% of that on the dock, it certainly does cut into that profit, that ability to move all of that volume downriver. The higher water actually is better for us, as long as the Coast Guard isn't closing the river in some cases to that navigation as well. But certainly the higher water is a help.
I'm going to second what Dennis had said, and that's where sometimes you just don't know. You know, you've got so many different supply chain disruptions. It's hard to predict what that future is going to be. We do know for being in the Midwest, we continue to know that there's going to be tremendous need for ag products, especially over the next 30 years with the food scarcity challenges that we're facing as a world and the fact that the world population is going to increase by 25%. And so that's where, you know, when you talk about infrastructure and the need for these ports and better utilizing the inland waterway system, that's why that is so important. It's a tremendous opportunity. But again, with the supply chain disruptions, it's hard to predict whether it's high water, low water, if there's tariffs, if there's some global political thing that's going on. The important thing, I think, for all of us is that communication, working with the DOTs, working with the Corps of Engineers for the high water, low water. There's a lot of things in the queue that we're focusing more on resiliency. Sometimes you can't solve all of those problems, and it's more of a resiliency and trying to be proactive as far as how can we lessen that risk during those periods of time.
We focused a lot on exports, but we import a lot too, and it comes through St. Louis. A big one being for agriculture, fertilizer comes through here, steel comes through here. Can we talk about the importance of imports now?
Yeah, I'll add to that, but Dennis is probably the best one to answer that. But, you know, for a lot of us on the upper Mississippi River, for those imports, petroleum refining products, steel, the fertilizers, the cements all coming into the area. And again, I'm going to be on my cheerleading speech as far as the value of those inland waterway systems and the fact that the diversity of the commodities that are coming in and out of those ports, again, depending on what's going on with supply chain disruptions, one minute, you know, coal, that commodity is way up here, and then all of a sudden there's an environmental change in legislation and coal is no longer being moved through. But at these ports in the Midwest, you have that diversity in the commodities, whether importing or exporting, that really allows that efficiency and that reliability with our ports.
And I'd add to that, and you already mentioned it, is fertilizer. We handle a tremendous amount through America's Central Port, but the St. Louis region in general brings in a lot of fertilizer to the area. And that, of course, again, it just acts like that funnel bringing it in, and then it's spread out from there, hub and spoke system, really, for fertilizer movement on the way out, and then grain coming back in to get to that river system. From here, it's taken out by rail, it's taken out by truck, and even at our facility, we have a special blending thing where you can get different blends through ADM, Agrium, and others that really the truckers can come in, order a special blend of different types of fertilizer at one location, and it's all kind of almost computerized where you can come in and just basically go to the different stations to fill the truck and out you go. A fair amount of other commodities too, and one of the big ones I think I want to talk about it is just a little bit on the leading edge. We just on the barge industry, and you talk about volumes, and definitely we're down from years ago. We could use more product on the river system. One of those that Mary's been working very hard on is container on barge. Because if you think about putting a box on a barge and moving it anywhere in the country, in the world, or otherwise, and these are just ocean-going containers, 20-foot and 40-foot containers, it doesn't matter what's inside that. So we could start talking about and bringing to the St. Louis area or out from the St. Louis area tennis shoes, clothing, textiles, lumber, anything that you could think about putting in one of these boxes. We did it for a while through the port, COVID hit, and then all of a sudden the container rates spiked 3 to 4 times of what they were, but we were moving 200 some containers at a time down south to the Gulf and repositioning those containers. But it really opens up a whole new opportunity, specialty grains being one of those, to be able to containerize those and take those to foreign markets.
You know, JFK, as everybody knows, the famous quote, well, he made several, I guess, but you know, farmers pay at retail or buy at retail, sell at bulk, and pay freight both ways. And so it's very important for us to also have that same infrastructure, not only for our exports, but for the fertilizer that we need to ensure that we have a nutritious crop for the next cycle. But the closed container, I mean, just imagine, what if we had, you know, grain drying cargo closed containers at the edge of our field. And then we could direct sell that to somebody in Thailand because I'm growing exactly the type of soybeans that they want to use for their food product. Imagine my opportunity as a commodity farmer to diversify and market myself because I will grow exactly what you want. And I don't even have to do it. I don't have to attribute a 50,000 grain bin to that one type. I could just start doing it with a closed container at the edge of my field and get it to you even faster in a more reliable, sustainable, efficient way. Imagine the opportunities that we haven't even dreamt of yet by opening up and bending the value chain and allowing our farmers to direct market. It's that kind of discussion that makes sure that those containers are filled up both ways and that makes everybody a win-win situation.
And then I was going to add to build upon what Dennis and Megan had said. Dennison mentioned container on barge. We have also been partnering with a group with different ports from southern Louisiana, the Gulf of Mexico, as far as trying to elevate that thought process and what Megan is talking about. And that is working with a group who's designed a vessel specifically designed for containerized cargo to be moved up and down the Mississippi River. They're looking at having almost 2,300 containers on a vessel. Now let's talk about that scale of economy. And Dennis talked about the price of moving containerized cargo as far as with the trucking industry, your cost is relatively higher than what it would be for rail. And then rail is more expensive than barge. Scale of economy, 2,300 containers on a vessel. So we've already said that one of the cheapest lanes of transportation is the inland waterway system that's underutilized. Now scale of economy, as far as moving 2,300 containers versus 600 or 800 on a train or two on a truck. And so that's where we're anticipating that cost savings could be as much as 20% to 30%. Obviously, it has a lot of environmental benefits because you're pulling trucks off the interstate system. And then again, when it comes to supply chain disruptions, you're offering a new option to transport containerized cargo. And then, you know, obviously, Dennis and I are talking quite a bit about the St. Louis area. But for the St. Louis area, for something like this, we would be one of several major hubs. Memphis would be a hub. St. Louis would be a hub. But our success is really, it's a hub and spoke concept. So we're just the hub. We've got to have our partners as far as those spokes to be able to distribute those containerized cargo. So for this planned development, we're working very closely with other regions like Kansas City, Memphis, and Chicago. We're working with the rail industry as far as how do you efficiently distribute those containers.
Mary Lammy of Multimodal Enterprises was the last voice you heard there. She was on a panel discussion about the Ag Coast in St. Louis and the barge traffic there, along with Dennis Wilmsmeyer, who is the Executive Director of America's Central Port, and Megan Kaiser of the United Soybean Board. The host of the panel was Jesse Harding of Nebraska. She's a member of the NAFB and a graduate of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.